Okay, some of you may have heard Michael Card recently. He did a little concert. He played our Christmas party last year. And I want today is almost a collection of six or seven classes, just small little vignettes. I like to do these classes periodically like this because it gives me six or seven shots at addressing a need in your life. So that improves the odds. And it gives you six or seven times to phase out and still come back and get a whole Sunday school lesson. So you don't have to pay attention, but like 10, 15% of the time, you get a lesson. I increase my odds of getting to most of you with something that's useful. But to understand it, for me, I've been thinking this week, and this will be a little bit of carry-on into next week, not from this written lesson. We'll be doing the same thing with some additional material that I'll write up. To me, this is journey music. This is journey time. So the Israelites are taking a journey from Egypt to the Promised Land. We're all doing the same thing. It's not necessarily from Egypt, but each of us have a journey before the Lord. That's what our life is. And we're all headed to a land of promise that He has promised beforehand, that He has prepared for us through the cross. So we're all in various places of a journey. And some of us are going to finish our journey before others of us are. But it doesn't matter how close or how far we are from the end of the journey, we're still in the journey today. And so I want to start with a Michael Card song. It takes about 2.5 minutes. We'll put the lyrics up there. I've entitled this lesson, Journey Stories. Ah, here we go. Okay, so this is our journey music. We're going to talk about the journey. We're going to talk about the journey that you and I are going through in our lives. But we're going to use for our vignettes scenes from the journey of the Israelites' lives, with the idea that some of the things they saw and some of the things they experienced may speak to us in our journey and give us who are stranded in time, as Michael Card says, something to hold on to as we look at the hope that we confidently expect to be at the end of the door of this life. I love the idea of life as a journey. If you've never read the book, Hinds Feet on High Places, I recommend it, especially for those of you who are in here who are under the age of 18. Because of the dynamics of the way church works and classes work, we wind up with some kids in here who are under the age of 18. And if you don't have this book, you need to ask for it from your mom or your dad or your uncle or your aunt or your grandmother or your grandfather, or come up and ask someone like me for it. Because if you assure us that you'll read it, I'm sure a number of us would like to make sure you get a copy. It's a wonderful book about the journey of this allegorical character who makes it through a journey, learning to grow before the Lord through the difficulties of life. So here is vignette number one. Vignette number one, some things belong in song. That's the vignette, that's the lesson. We get this from the Exodus story. Here's what's happened. Abraham has his offspring have their offspring, Isaac has Jacob, Jacob moves with all of his kids into Egypt. The promise is that the promised land's going to be there, but generation after generation after generation goes by. And now you've got tens of thousands at least, Israelites living in bondage in Egypt, and I'm sure in the back of their minds they thought hardly anything at all about the promised deliverance. They're in slavery to Pharaoh. Then something incredible happens. Moses, one of their boys that's supposed to be killed, gets adopted into Pharaoh's house. This could be really good news. But the adoption doesn't go all so well, because as Moses grows to become a man, he kills somebody and is an outlaw, a renegade, and he flees to the desert. But, and this is the way life is, right? It's got its ups and downs, okay? So that's the down. But he's in the desert and he's got to take off his shoes because he's on holy ground before God Almighty. He says to God, okay, who should I tell Pharaoh sent me? And God's answer is, I am who I am. Now, some people say Yahweh, which is what he said, is his name. Technically, that may not be true. God may be saying, my name is almost either A, something you can't pronounce, or B, it's a concept beyond you. But in a sense, God gives him substance as an answer instead of a label. I'm not the God of the sun. I'm not the God of the moon. I am. I'm essence. I'm being. If you're Thomas Aquinas, I am pure being. You just go tell them God who is. So he goes back down. Well, what happens? Well, Pharaoh says, I'm not letting the people go. And God brings curse, plague, curse, plague, 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 curse, curse. After one, finally, there is this stunning night where we know the story. And the people get released. But don't you know, it was a weird night. I mean, they're painting blood on the door. They got to eat all of the lamb. They got to make goofy bread that doesn't rise and taste all that hot. They got bitter herbs. They've got this whole ordeal. And then in the middle of the night, it's not the kind of thing where Pharaoh says, okay, y'all get your stuff packed, you can leave. I mean, in the middle of the night, Pharaoh calls them in and says, get out now. And the other Egyptians are thinking, man, these people, there's not a house that doesn't have devastation. Anybody with a child has lost a child. Because the firstborn is dead, not only of the people, but of even the livestock. And so the Egyptians are saying, here, we'll give you, here, you take my watch, go. Well, they didn't have watches. Take my wrist sundial. I know that because I've seen the Flintstones. Go. And they're giving them what they got. And so the people are like, whoa, whoa, whoa. But Moses was serious. We've got to, you know, get the stuff. Get, man, load up. Don't forget. And you look, it's like the Beverly Hillbillies. They're loaded up the truck and they moved. With Granny on the rocking chair in the back. And they're moving it and they're going and they're following God because God leads them in a pillar of fire by day, cloud by night, you know, and they're following and he leads them to this huge expanse of water. Meanwhile, Pharaoh, the middle of the night is gone. His night terrors alleviate. He's now angry. He's really furious. And he corrals his chariots and he goes after them. And the people are panicked. They're cut off. They're trapped. They're about to be annihilated. The Jews are going to be destroyed as a people. And Moses sees God, and he knows what God would have him do. And God parts the waters. And the Israelites go through on dry land. And Pharaoh's chariots start after them, and the waters come back together. Okay, sometimes you need a song. Because what happens immediately afterwards is in Exodus chapter 15, the people break out in song. And I don't know what the melody was. Based on what I've heard in some Jewish singing, it's not much by our standards. But I'm sure to them it was beautiful, and I'm sure to the Lord it was too. But I mean, it's not like a Beatles song or maybe. Then Moses and the people of Israel, they sang this song to the Lord, saying. Now that Lord is all capitals, a big capital and small capitals. Why? Because that is Yahweh. And that's the way they spell Yahweh in the Bible. That's the name that God said, you can tell them, Yahweh sent you. So they sang this to the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to the God of the burning bush, to the one who is, to the one who rescued them. They sing a song to him, singing, I will sing to the Lord, again, Yahweh. For he has triumphed gloriously. He threw the horse. He threw the rider. That could also be translated chariot. He threw the horse and the chariot, the riders, into the sea. He is my strength. He, Yahweh, is my strength. Yahweh is my song. And Yahweh has become my salvation. And that's the song. When life's circumstances are dark, when life's circumstances are bleak, Wayne, can I use you as an example? Sitting next to Gary Greer is his college friend, Wayne, down here. Wayne's been diagnosed with terminal cancer. He's praying and expecting God for a miracle. He's also receiving the best medical treatment that humanity has to offer right now for this cancer. It's an insidious cancer called mesothelioma. Pray for Wayne. I've prayed for him. I prayed for his healing. I still do it every day. But I want to tell you, he's a man of faith because he knows who is his strength, who is his song, and who will be his salvation, whether it's today, next year, 10 years from now, or if he lives another 100 years, you know who your salvation is. And the people of Israel got to, some things just demand a song. I've gone through the lesson and I've pulled out some more about this song, but I'm going to leave it here now, go back to the PowerPoint, because we're going to make our point for home from this vignette and move to the next one. Moses and the people of Israel sang this song to the Lord. Here's my point. Find you songs of faith. When I was in college, I read a study or came across a study. Someone told me of a study. I didn't read it. Okay. Someone told me of a study that indicated that for a long time, scientists and social psychologists thought that you would sing songs that reflect the mood you're in. If you're in a melancholy mood, you sing a melancholy song. If you're in a happy mood, you sing a happy song. And this study indicated it's flip-flopped. And the studies afterwards had indicated much the same thing, that actually what you sing can affect your mood. So you get you some songs. And here is a want more. I think we should attach somewhere within our website a list of good songs for people, for whatever need you have. There's a need for scripture for certain things, but there are some songs. The song by John Michael Talbot, "Healer of My Soul," got me through a year and a half of a dark valley in my life. And I think I played and prayed that song probably 5 times a day on average, literally. There are songs of joy that we need to have. There are songs of worship that we need to have. Get yourself some songs of faith and make them part of your life and part of your children's life. Sing songs on your journey. Next, vignette number 2. If you slept through number 1, it's time to wake up. See if you're into this one. If not, doze back off. We'll get you for number 3. I'll be your wake-up call. I'll tell you, time to wake up and check out the next one. Yahweh is a God of provision. Here's what happens. The people, they sing this incredible song. It's a song of praise. It's a song of confidence. It's a song of God has redeemed us. And then they march for a couple of days and they come to a place that in Hebrew is Marah. Marah in Hebrew means bitter. And the Hebrew word's a fun word because you're able to put it in different forms. And in one form, it means to make yourself bitter, to become bitter. And this is bitter water, and the Israelites are bitter people. And they start complaining, and they start whining, and they start grumbling. The water stinks. The water tastes terrible. We're thirsty. This is horrendous. And Moses, this is your fault. Moses turns to God and says, okay, the bitterness in the water is spreading to the people. What do we help? God says, okay, here's your answer. There's a log over there. Throw the log in, and it'll make the water sweet. Now, this is obviously going to take a miracle. I don't have the chemistry background to be certain, but I'm willing to wager that there aren't typically logs that turn bitter water sweet. I tried this. I got some pretty bad tasting water, and I just took a toothpick and put it in there. It didn't change it. So I'm willing to say that it was the touch of God and the obedience of Moses that brought forward the sweetness that was needed, the salve for the bitter. God provided water and sweet water to those thirsty Israelites. Well, then immediately after that, they start complaining because they don't like the food. You know, they only brought so much. You didn't give us a lot of time to pack. We're running out of food. We're not comfortable. I don't want to kill the ox. The ox is pulling the cart that has grandma in the rocking chair. I kill the ox, I got to put grandma on my back. Use her rocker to cook the ox. This is a bad deal. And they start whining about that. Moses goes to God. God says, I will provide. And he provides manna in the morning and quail at night. They get their carbs, they get their protein. And if they're eating the dark meat and the fat, they're getting the fat. They got all of it. God does give them a little provision. He says, hey, don't get greedy. Just gather the manna in the morning that you need for the day, unless it's the sixth day, and then gather twice as much so you don't work on the rest, on Sabbath rest. So those who would get it, you know, there were some, there are always greedy people. Okay, some people are looking at it thinking, hey, I'm going to get some extra and sell it on eBay. Okay. Well, it turns to worms. God says, you're not going to trump and trick God. So anyway, but God provides for them again. Well, they keep going through the wilderness. They get thirsty again. They're not happy. They start grumbling, and they're grumbling to Moses. They're at least at a point where they're not blaming God directly. They blame him indirectly. Well, Moses, this is all your fault for making us follow God. Moses turns around and says to him, hey, you can say you're grumbling against me, but you're not tricking me and you're not tricking the Lord. You're grumbling against the Lord. I tried a case one time against a lawyer named, we'll just call him Ernest. And actually, I didn't try it. I was the young baby lawyer who was just there along for the ride. And the question was, did this woman die from the food poisoning from a McDonald's cheeseburger? And Ernest had gone to school with the jury. It was in a real small town up in Madisonville, Texas. And Ernest had a Bible that had been used to swear in one of the witnesses. And he'd kept that Bible on counsel table the whole time. Ernest also happened to be in my Sunday school class. And so Ernest stood up to the jury in closing argument. And he said, you know, Ona Mae Clute, she's dead. And we've got to value her and value her life. She loved her son. She had a son with severe disabilities. And lived in a state school at this point. Didn't have anybody else take care of him. It was a real sad situation. So Ernest said, how do you value love? And he picked up the Bible. And he said, look, I went to high school with all you people on this jury. He said, y'all know me. I ain't very good at following what's in this book. He said, but that doesn't change the fact it's the word of the Lord. Then he turned and he pointed at me. He said, see that boy with the glasses? He's my Sunday school teacher. He said, Mark, if I need to read to the jury about love, where should I turn in the Bible? Well, I'm sitting there thinking, I'm so fired after this case. You know, the lawyer I'm working for is going to think I've been secretly meeting with Ernest trying to figure this out. So I thought of all the smart aleck responses. Ernest, if you'd come to Sunday school, you wouldn't have to ask. I thought all of that, but I didn't say any of it. I just said, Ernest, I'd turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 13. So he flips it open, you know. Love is patient. Love is, yeah, Mark, this is what I was looking for. Thank you. And love is patient. And he reads all the way through and he talks about it. Well, our local council gets up to give their part of closing argument. And the local council says, listen, I go to church with all of you. I grew up with all of you. The ways of the Lord are dark and mysterious. We don't understand them. But he said, the point I'm trying to tell you is, for some reason, God took Ona Mae Clute. McDonald's didn't send her. And he sat down. Ernest gets up in his rebuttal, and he's steaming mad. He's cartoon mad. I mean, smoke's coming out his ears. He's red-faced. His eyes are bulging out. Looks like a Looney Tune cartoon. He's tugging on his mustache, and he looks at that jury, and he looks at our local council. John Bankhead was his name. He looks at John Bankhead, and he looks at me. He looks back at that jury. He looks back at John Bankhead. Then he looks at me. Then he first words out of his mouth, Lanier, didn't it make you want to puke when Bankhead blamed the Lord for killing Miss Clute? I'm sitting there. I'm like 25 years old. This is 25 years ago, okay? I'm 25 years old. I'm sitting there. I said, no, sir. He said, well, it did me, and I'll bet it did the Lord. And then he's launched into his rebuttal. Now, Ernest had pierced to the heart of the matter. You can blame someone else, but ultimately, you don't go around blaming God and just pretending you're blaming someone else. You know, the people are complaining to Moses, but they're complaining about God. And Moses says, why are you grumbling to God? And God says, look, you get 70 elders. I'm getting a little, it's time to nip this in the bud. You get 70 of the elders. I want them to witness what we are about to do here, because this is an affront to me, God, when you grumble and complain like that. So the 70 elders come. God says to Moses, go over to that rock, hit it with your staff. Bam! And out comes the water. And he says, don't grumble against the Lord. Now, lesson for home. Jesus teaches his apostles, his disciples, more than the apostles, to pray. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Sorry, I memorized it, King James. I think I could do it in today's English, but let's just hang on to King James. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, you know it, on earth like it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. Yes. That's what we're to pray. Well, what about tomorrow? You pray it again tomorrow. One day at a time. God provides for you one day at a time. Don't you start thinking that you've got... Oh, what about... Jesus tells the story about the man who had built up his IRA and his 401ks and everything to where he was fully funded and he could be an ING commercial. He'd reached the magic number. And Jesus says, fool, he's going to die that night. Okay? Here's the deal. Lord, would you please take care of me today? May God bless and keep you today. May he let his face shine upon you. May he give you peace today. And I pray tomorrow you come back for another blessing. Come back before the Lord, because each day, he will be your provision. And that's what we do. Don't grumble. Pray. Set it before the Lord. And if the Lord doesn't give you bread today, I have a great idea. Don't eat bread today. Next. Wake up. This is story number 3. Vignette number 3. Okay, so the Israelites, they're going through... This dumb group of people, led by this guy named Amalek, decide, hey, look at these guys, these wandering vagabonds with granny on the ox cart. Let's go attack them, plunder them. We'll leave granny, but we'll take the rocker. And so Amalek comes and attacks. Well, Moses says, hey, Joshua picks his best general. Joshua, get the troops, go down there and protect the people. So Joshua gets the troops, they go down there. Moses, meanwhile, goes up on a little hill. He's got Aaron, he's got Hur, he's going to watch the battle. And he takes with him the staff of God, because God promised with that staff to redeem the people from bondage in Egypt. Remember that at the burning bush. Moses says, God, I can't do this. I don't have what it takes. God's response to Moses, his permanent lesson to Moses was, oh, bless your heart, you don't have what it takes. Well, do you have a piece of wood? Yeah, I got my staff. Throw it on the ground. Throws it, it becomes the snake. Pick it up. God says, okay, well, Moses, you may not be talented enough to do it, but the piece of wood is. So you just be the carrier of the piece of wood. And as long as that piece of wood's there with me, it's adequate for the task. The permanent lesson, don't ever tell God, well, I don't have what it takes to do what you want me to. Well, dummy, that's why he's God. He's going to do it with you and through you and in spite of you sometimes. So Moses takes the stick, because God promised he can do it with the stick, and he goes up there and he raises the stick up. Why? Because that's saying God is our strength. God is our victory. God does it. It's the stick that hit the rock. Of course, Moses, bless his heart, never learned the lesson. We don't get to it this week, but later on God says, go talk to the rock, and Moses is kind of like, no, remember it's the stick. But he's got the stick. But you know what? The battle wasn't over in about 5 minutes. Hold your arms up like this for about 5 minutes. They start getting kind of tired. So he's kind of, whoa. Well, then all of a sudden it's not God. It's the people. And people start losing. Moses, get that stick back up! And the people start winning. I wonder if that was a coincidence. And the people start losing. And the people start winning. Okay, I'm 80 years old. I'm tired. Okay, let's get you a rock. She said, get that rock over here. Moses needs to sit down. So he sits down on the rock. Okay, I'll get this arm. You get that arm. And they're holding his arms up, and the people of Israelite win. But who was the conqueror? Moses? The stick? No, Yahweh's the conqueror. And Moses says it. The Lord is my banner. It's Yahweh, my banner. That's who I'll hold up. It is God who delivers you from whatever you've got. You've got a challenge. You've got a struggle. You've got a battle. You've got someone waging war with you. You've got an inner battle going on. You win. Don't ever strut like a chicken. I won that. Woo! Who was the professional wrestler who would do that? Nature Boy, Ric Flair. Woo! And he'd do that strut. Woo! Okay, no. The victory belongs to the Lord. What's the Keith Green line? When I'm doing well, help me to never seek a crown, for my reward is giving glory to you. Look, we are like 80% water. How much water are we? Janet, you ought to know this. 70 something. So we're just a bunch of watered down people. I don't care how high and mighty you are. I don't care if you've got more degrees behind your name than a thermometer, as Ron tells me frequently. And he doesn't either. I'm not pointing him out in a bad way, because none of it matters. We belong to the Almighty King. And as we learned last night from our speaker, when God is this big, it doesn't mean we're that small. It means we're big because a God that big loves us. So your dignity and your value is incredible, but it's not because of who you are. It's not because of what you do. It's because God loves you. And so when you win in your life, don't turn around and strut like a chicken. The victory belongs to God. Okay, wake up. Point number four, godly advice. So here's what happens. Moses gets visited by his father-in-law. His father-in-law says, hey, man, we've missed you. We've missed the wife, our daughter, your wife, Zipporah. We've missed the grandkids. This is delightful. Moses shows them around the camp. Let me tell you what's happened. And they're talking. And then the next day, Moses says, hey, father-in-law or dad or whatever he called him. He said, I got to go to work. And from sunup to sundown, Moses holds court while the people bring him every little petty skirmish and problem that they have. Well, so-and-so pitched his tent, and I think he used one of my stakes on his tent. I know, because those wooden stakes, I looked at them, and I made mine to a certain kind of a point. It was my stake. Okay, my chickens crossed over to his, and one of his roosters impregnated my hen, and he wants half the egg. And I offered him the white, but I want the yolk. And he wants half of the yolk. And it's a cholesterol thing. And so what happens? Jethro, his father-in-law, says, listen, this is stupid. And I love the way he says it. It's in Exodus 18. This is only a father-in-law can speak this way. And, you know, I got four daughters. I'm getting so warmed up. Listen to this. I love this. This is really good. I mean, you got in-law kids. This is good. Okay. Moses' father-in-law said to him, hey, what you're doing is not good. He didn't use the word stupid. You and the people with you will certainly wear yourselves out. The thing's too heavy for you. You're not able to do it alone. Now look at this, father-in-law. Obey my voice. I'll give you advice, and God will be with you. All right? Let me go back to PowerPoint. Obey my voice. I'll give you advice, and God will be with you. Here it is. Don't do it alone. Appoint lesser judges. You be kind of like the Supreme Court, and you got all these lesser judges. So you can appoint other people and let these other people do the rulings on the easy cases. And then the really hard ones can come to you. Works. You take the hard one, let Judge Judy do the easy ones. Hard? Easy. Appeal? Easy. So point for home. Surround yourself with good counselors. The Proverbs say that there is wisdom and a strong house with good counsel. And you don't want bad counselors. You want godly counsel. Psalm 1, it's the righteous who are planted by the streams of the water of life, who give their fruit in its season and whose leaf never withered, not so the wicked. So don't get wicked counselors. Get you godly counselors. Now here's a problem with some of us in here. Some of us won't ever get good counsel because we're not good at sharing or being close enough to someone where they've got an ability to give us counsel. And I'm just telling you, if that's where you are in your life, you're missing out. Isn't it? It's not, okay, you're going to hell. You don't have any good friends. I don't mean that. You're saying you're missing out. So where do you get good counsel? Meet the people around you. Get in a connection group here. We have connection groups. Get in a connection group that we're with people you relate to. I need good advice. I have zero qualms calling Steve up. Hey, Steve, what do I need to do about this? And Steve tells me, I've got dear friends at work that I get good at. Kevin Roberts right over there. I'm fortunate enough to work with him as well as to be related to him. Randy Hunt next to him. I mean, I've got wonderful brother-in-laws. I can call up and say, hey, what do you think about this? Get people. Maybe it's your spouse. Maybe it's not. But godly advice. Have and use good godly counselors. It saved Moses and probably his marriage. Okay. Wake up. Next vignette. Only got time for maybe one or two more. Time with the Lord changes you. So Moses, they got the golden idol. The Ten Commandments get busted. He goes back up on Sinai. He takes tablets. God writes on the tablets. And for 40 days, Moses is in the presence of God. And after 40 days and 40 nights, he comes back down. And the Israelites can't handle it. Do you know why? His face shone so brightly. God, time with in God's presence, transformed Moses to the point that it was visual. Spend time with God. I cannot tell you every sermon I heard growing up at the Broadway Church of Christ in Lubbock, Texas. But I can tell you, Joe Barnett, who frequently will come to this class, preached at least 6 times a year on the importance of daily quiet time with God. Because I heard it, and as a high school boy decided, actually maybe even middle school, decided that was going to be the course of my life. To make a decision that every day of my life, I'm going to find time to be alone with God. Some days, it's been less than a minute. And probably a wasted minute in some ways. Hear me out. I don't mean it in a bad way. I just mean that sometimes I don't really do that much with the minute. It's fighting going to sleep. But I realize I've missed it. And I don't want to miss a day. So the minute, even if there's not a lot of going back and forth, that the fact that the minute occurs means that I made it another day. And I want to do it every day. I want every day my Father to hear my voice say to Him, I love you, and I thank you for the breath that I had today. I want every day, and I don't want to do it just for a minute. I want it to be longer. I want to spend time in His Word. Some of the best advice I got, Dr. Batzel Barrett Baxter, when I was studying to get my degree in biblical languages, he said to me, Mark, you'll be taking over 60 hours of Bible to get this. And he said, here's the key. Your temptation's going to be to let your Bible study become your quiet time. Don't let it. Because you're studying for school, you're studying for all these other things. That's different than your quiet devotional time with the Lord. It's the reason theologians and even some seminarians get in trouble if they ever let the subject captivate them beyond the man, the God, the one behind the subject. Makes sense? So, point for home. Bad company corrupts good morals. The opposite of that is true. You hang around with the Lord, spend daily time with Him, and watch Him transform your life. You may not physically shine, but your life will shine. You'll be the city set upon a hill that shines through the darkness of night. Spend time with the Lord. Wake up. Last story. It's the last one we got time for. And it's a pity because we had another one coming. But that's okay. You can read it at home. That's why we do these handouts. So here's what happens. Aaron's got four boys. He's got Nadab and Abihu, and he's got Eleazar and Ithamar. I don't know if those are names you've used with any of your children. We bypassed them. They would probably have been next in line. But these boys are serving the Lord. Nadab and Abihu, it's their day. They're supposed to go offer incense. They go offer incense. And they offer wrong, bad incense before the Lord. And God strikes them dead. Aaron's distraught. He's just lost two sons. Bam! And it's not like he lost them to Pharaoh. He lost them to God. Bam! Moses says, don't question God. Well, Aaron's at peace with that. Those of us who live in the post-enlightenment age are saying, well, what do you mean don't question God? That's my job. That's what happens. And then you keep reading the story. And Eleazar and Ithamar, the last two boys, they're told, okay, now go take this burnt goat and you eat every drop of it. Don't leave any of it. That's what you're supposed to do. Eleazar and Ithamar, they go start to do that. Well, they can't eat. Their brothers just got zapped. So they don't eat it. Moses says, what is wrong with your parenting? You got four disobedient sons. You can't just go disobey. And two are already dead. And now these two have done this wrong. And Aaron says, look, they're grieving the loss of their brothers. Okay? They couldn't eat it. Moses says, oh, okay. Now, how do we handle that story? Do we handle it and say, oh, just divide it in half. Take that first story, Nadab and Abihu. They offered unauthorized incense to the Lord. They got killed. That means you better do nothing wrong or God will kill you. Does that prompt legalism? Now does that mean we must worship exactly this way, this way, this way, or we're going to hell? No. I'll tell you what happened. In between the story of Nadab and Abihu and Eleazar and Ithamar, Moses puts an insert that says, hey, Aaron, you and all of your offspring in the future, don't get drunk before you start serving the Lord. That's what happened to Nadab and Abihu. They had an absolute, utter disregard for God and His holiness. They turned it into party time. No. Absolutely not. And so when the brothers do it out of grief and pure heart, it's not, oh, you get that. There's a difference there. And that's why Aaron held his peace when Moses explained to him the difference. Now, what does that mean for us? When bad things happen to good people, when the unexplainable happens, when you've got cancer, from exposure to a toxin that people knew was bad. When you've got, and they just didn't tell you. When you've got problems with a daughter, and you don't understand what's going on. Is it medical? Is it, you know, just, what do we do? Hey, this isn't right. This isn't fair. This doesn't make sense. You put it in the scales and it just doesn't make sense. Why do the good die young? I don't know. I mean, I could write a book. It'd be pretty short. I don't know. Turn the page for the answer. Turn the page. I don't know. I'm not God. And I can't explain it. And I weep when I've got people who are hurting. But there is a time to weep. There's a time for joy. And I can offer speculation. I can give you ideas. I can tell you what might be going on in God's eternal tapestry as to why this particular thread is red at this point in the tapestry as opposed to being green. But I'm speculating. I don't know. Here's what I do know. I know that God is. And I know that He made us, and I know that He loves us, and I know that He loves us enough to die for us. He loves us as much as He loves His own Son. And I know that this life is a puff of smoke in the eternity that He holds in His hand. And I know within that eternity there's no night, there's no tears, there's no disease. And why something happens in the puff of smoke and it goes this way or it goes that way before it's gone, I don't know. But I know whom I have believed, and I'm persuaded that He's able to keep that I've committed to Him against that day. And on that I live, and on that I will die. Would you pray with me? Lord God, Your ways are beyond ours. But Your compassion and Your love is to the very marrow of our bones. We love You very, very much. Would You please help those who are hurting, help those who are struggling. Pray for Wayne and his disease. Pray for Amy and whatever she's going through. Pray for all of the people and all of the concerns that are in here. That You will, with Your Spirit, touch and bless those people who come to You for Your blessing today. Give us this day our daily bread. And may we see You again tomorrow. In this world or in eternity. Through Jesus we pray, amen.